MSW Media. Big shout out today to Helix Sleep. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. Today, the Florida Supreme Court has allowed the 6-week abortion ban to go into effect, but it has also ruled that abortion access and legalized marijuana will be on the ballot this November. Jack Smith's response to Judge Aileen Cannon's weird jury instructions order is due today. Hope Hicks is expected to testify in the Manhattan DA election interference hush money trial. Truth Social stock tanks after an abysmal regulatory filing. A vehicle has rammed into the entry gate of the FBI field office in Atlanta. Republicans have texted and emailed their way into a big money problem. Representative Don Bacon says it's possible that Mike Johnson could lose his speakership over Ukraine aid. A third employee of that small newspaper in Kansas has sued over the police raid. A Ted Cruz PAC got over $600,000 from iHeartRadio. And new evidence links the Russian GRU to the Havana Syndrome. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Happy Tuesday, my friend.
Happy Tuesday to you. How are you?
I am really, really good. First of all, I promised that there'd be bugs with the Patreon presale tickets for the new shows, and there are, so you're welcome. Promises made, promises kept. We're working them out. Keep your eye on your Patreon and your inbox for the latest. Tickets are going really fast for you and me and Andy McCabe in Portland and Seattle in July.
Amazing.
Yeah. So everybody grab those up while you still can. The Jack podcast is up. We had some technical difficulties there, but you'll want to give it a listen this week if you haven't already. Ah, the joys of independent media.
Or retrograde. Who knows where Mercury is these days?
Is it? Is Mercury
in Uranus?
So.
I don't think so. Ask me. Someone listening definitely knows though, but I don't think we are in a retrograde right now.
Well, anyway, thanks everybody for your patience with us. These are things that are beyond our control. But, you know, the buck stops with us, so my apologies. Later on in the show, I'm going to have a special block on the Havana Syndrome report that was put out by The Insider for a year-long investigation from 60 Minutes and a couple of other investigative journalists. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you because I don't see it much on mainstream media. All right, we have so much news. Dana, I have 4 Chrome windows open with like 20 tabs each trying to keep the news straight this week.
I don't know how you do it. I really don't.
This is the most inundated with headlines we've been in a really long time, but we got some really great news, unfortunately coupled with some bad news today, but we'll get to that in the hot notes first. We have some quick hits.
And to make a long story short,
too late.
All right, first up, Special Counsel Jack Smith's response to Judge Aileen Cannon's weird order for jury instructions is due today. You'll remember she asked for both parties to pretend that the Presidential Records Act says something that it doesn't and write jury instructions based on that misinterpretation of the law. I have long thought, well, not long, but since this came out, this jury instruction order came out, I've thought that Jack Smith would respond by saying, I'm not going to pretend that the law says something it doesn't, so I'm not going to write jury instructions based on your misinterpretation of the law. And if you really think that the law says this, you should dismiss the charges, and I'll go to the 11th Circuit. Deal? Deal. I think that's what he's going to say. He could also file with the 11th Circuit for a writ of mandamus, ordering her to withdraw that weird jury instruction. But that would be a pretty, ballsy step. And I'm not sure that he would take that, because if he loses, then he's kind of fucked. Mm-hmm. We'll know more later today. And of course, Andy McCabe and I will cover it on this weekend's episode of the Jack Podcast.
Thanks so much, AG. And when Fox News tells people to hate the FBI and not trust the FBI, weird shit happens.
Weird.
An individual in a vehicle attempted to gain entry to the Atlanta FBI field office. That's according to FBI Atlanta spokesperson. And they definitely did it the hard way. The incident happened a little after noon, according to FBI Atlanta spokeswoman Jenna Salito. The suspect, who has not been named, got out of the vehicle on foot, was arrested, and was taken to a hospital for evaluation. Now, one of the things that's missed on here is they slam their car into a barrier. Mm-hmm. The vehicle is currently being cleared by bomb squad. That's according to Tony Thomas, an FBI Atlanta spokesperson. No FBI personnel were hurt in the incident. The FBI is opening a case into the incident and told CNN there's currently no clear motive.
You know, Dana, when I want to commit crimes, I do it at the FBI field office.
Nothing seems safer to me.
Seriously, they've got, I'm sure, great medical people on staff there.
Rob a police station. I bet they have, that seems like a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's the way I always do it. I am really interested to see. They're not ascribing a motive at this point, but I've got some feelings about who might have been driving the car.
Just
we'll
want to check their search history. That's all I need to do.
Yeah, pretty much. Next up from MSNBC, former White House staffer Hope Hicks is going to testify for the prosecution in the upcoming Manhattan DA election interference hush money trial. Now, we don't know if she's testifying voluntarily or if she'll be subpoenaed by the people to provide testimony, maybe treated as a hostile witness. Hope Hicks has also testified to Jack Smith's January 6th grand jury alongside Jared Kushner, by the way. The election interference trial jury selection begins on tax day, April 15th.
I'd love to see it. That is going to be the first time, I think, that a president has a criminal case begin, right?
Yep, this will be the first one. And keep in mind, these are for crimes that happened 8 years ago. So the wheels of justice turn
slow, but they're turning. Oof. Mm-hmm. All right, this one's from Alexander Marquez at NBC. Rep. Don Bacon on Sunday warned that, quote, it's possible that Speaker Mike Johnson could face a vote to oust him if he moves to pass Ukraine aid in the House. Quote, I'm not going to deny it, Bacon, who is a Republican from Nebraska, said when asked by moderator Kirsten Welker on NBC's Meet the Press whether it's possible Johnson could lose his speakership over Ukraine aid. Quote, we have one or two people that are not team players. They'd rather enjoy the limelight, the social media. That's what Bacon added, though he did not name any members. Quote, it's a very narrow majority, and one or two people can make us a minority. Yes, and I hope it happens quickly.
It's Gates, Boebert, and Green, by the way.
In
case you're wondering, the non-team players. She's a team player when she's in a theater, but not necessarily in Congress.
Wouldn't it be amazing, though, if they decided to oust him and then one of these Republicans that went to go retire, but not until like May or June were like, voted for Hakeem Jeffries. Like if one person switched their vote at that point, couldn't he actually become speaker before the election if they lose their majority? Yeah.
If somebody's planning to leave that hasn't left yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, just burn the place down on the way out. I'll take it.
Really? I mean, it's just such a clown show.
It would be the biggest fuck you and I would love it.
And there's been quite a few fuck yous. Yeah. So if those fuck yous can get bigger, then the more I like it. Now,
here's a big fuck you from iHeart.
Yeah, really. This kind of blew me away because early on in my little burgeoning podcast career, I had talks with iHeart. This is from the Houston Chronicle. Over the last year, iHeartMedia, the massive radio network that picked up the Verdict with Ted Cruz podcast in 2022, has made regular and growing payments to a super PAC supporting Ted Cruz's reelection effort. The payments, which the media company says are associated with ad revenue from the podcast, total $630,000, about a third of the $2 million the Truth and Courage PAC reported raising since the start of 2023. A third of the money is coming from iHeartRadio.
Jeez.
That's according to the latest FEC data. Cruz has said he makes no money from the podcast, and this blurs ethical lines because he is the top Republican on the Senate Commerce Committee, which oversees the communications industry. So I don't make any money, but my super PAC sure does, to the tune of $630,850. Dollarinis, as they say on The Jerk. By the way, I'm watching that Steve Martin documentary on... What is it on Apple TV? It's so good.
Is it? I'll have to check it out.
It's so good. And if you haven't read
it,
he's totally brilliant. The way he reinvented comedy, became the most famous comedian, selling out 20,000 seat arenas and then quitting. It's for all the right reasons. Just brilliant. Just a brilliant man. And if you've never read Born Standing Up, I recommend.
It's so good. I read that.
I was in tears.
Yep.
Talking about performing through major anxiety attacks. I've been there, you know. Tangent, but he is my surrogate father. So he doesn't know. I told him on Twitter, but he didn't say anything. So I'm going to take that silence as a yes.
I bet as long as you're not asking for child support, he'd be happy to have you.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later. And it's not with Steve Martin, but with preborn babies. But we have a lot of news to get to. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right. First up, from Patricia Mazie at The Times. The Florida Supreme Court, Dana, overturned decades of legal precedent Monday, ruling that the state constitution's privacy protections do not extend to abortion, effectively allowing Florida to ban the procedure after just 6 weeks of pregnancy. That's before anybody even really knows they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But in a separate decision released at the same time, because, you know, you can't swing your leg without kicking yourself in the dick if you're a Republican, the justices allowed Florida voters to decide this fall whether to expand abortion access. It made it on the ballot. The court ruled unanimously that a proposed constitutional amendment that would guarantee the right to abortion before viability, usually around 24 weeks, could go on the November ballot. The rulings encapsulated in a single state on a single day how the country has grappled with the abortion issue since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe. Now, the conservative-leaning court found that a 15-week abortion ban enacted in 2022 was, in fact, constitutional. And that ruling will allow the 6-week ban enacted last year to take effect within 30 days. That's horrible. And again, I'm so glad I wrote that op-ed for military members to be able to travel.
So glad you did too.
Because that's where I was stationed when my sexual assault resulted in an unwanted pregnancy. And so, you know, the problem is that that only covers people in the military. Now, in paving the way for the 6-week ban, the court cemented the rapid transformation of Florida, once a destination for women seeking abortions in the American South, into a place with restrictive policies akin to those in the surrounding states. But allowing the ballot measure gave supporters of abortion rights a chance to continue their national campaign to preserve access to the procedure by giving voters the opportunity to directly weigh in on the issue. Ballot measures in favor of abortion rights have already succeeded in 7 states, including Kansas, Ohio, and Michigan. Abortion rights groups in about 10 states are trying to put measures on the ballot to secure access. Florida is the largest of those states, Dana. Historically, many women from southern states with stricter bans have traveled to Florida to get abortions. They will now have to seek abortions much further away, perhaps Virginia or D.C. Few women know they're pregnant at 6 weeks, like I said, and backers of abortion rights say the stricter ban, once effective, will amount to a near total prohibition. And also appearing on the ballot in November, the legalization of recreational cannabis.
Love it. AG, I do have a quick question before I go to the next one. The person writing the ballot measure, is this going to be someone for abortion access or against?
Oh, good question, because I remember that came up in Ohio, right? The Republicans were like wanting to put garbage language in it. We'll see how that goes.
It was sort of the same thing with Prop 8. Like when Prop 8 passed in California, mm-hmm. people thought they were voting for the right to get married. And if you voted yes on Prop 8 or something like that, or the reverse, you were actually not want it, whatever.
You had
it was,
to vote no,
right?
To get
okay.
Marriage.
Well, I'm just curious, we'll see how that goes, but hopefully, there'll be a shit ton of money being funneled in to make sure everyone knows how to vote on this when it hits the ballot in November.
Yeah, and Florida, I think Rick Wilson tweeted, Florida just got way more expensive. For
Republicans. Yeah, and there's no trickle down in economics in the RNC. I tell you that right now.
Nope, all the money's going to pay for Trump's legal bills.
Yeah, okay. This one's from Matt Egan at CNN. Shares of Truth Social. Owner, Trump Media and Technology Group, plunged Monday after the company disclosed that it lost more than $58 million and generated very little revenue in 2023.
Cue that Price is Right noise. Bum, bum, ba-dum, wah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. The figures underscore why some experts warn Trump Media's multi-billion dollar valuation defies logic and is reminiscent of the meme stock craze. Really? Him overvaluing something that he's a part of? In a regulatory filing on Monday, Trump Media said it lost $58.2 million in 2023 compared with a profit of $50.5 million in 2022. The Truth Social owner generated just $4.1 million in revenue, although that was up from $1.5 million in 2022. Not only that, but revenue tumbled 39% year over year in the fourth quarter to just $751,500. That's not what investors want to see from a startup, especially when valued at these levels. Shares of Trump Media tumbled 24% Monday afternoon following the new filings, though they are still up nearly 200% so far this year. The losses are so severe, though, that Trump Media's accountants warned they, quote, raise substantial doubt about its ability to continue as a going concern, which is Wall Street 4. Basically, they're saying we may not be able to stay in business. That warning echoes one made in November when accountants said Trump Media might not survive unless it soon completes its merger to go public. That long delay deal was completed last week, paving the way for Trump Media to receive an influx of approximately $300 million in cash. The company can now use those funds to pay down debt and, importantly, build out its infrastructure. Quote, I believe the $300 million of cash should remove this, quote, going concern risk. And that was Matthew Kennedy. He's a senior IPO strategist at Renaissance Capital. Even though Trump Media is losing money and generating scant revenue, Wall Street has valued the company by as much as $11 billion based on the stock's closing price Friday. And that's according to Renaissance Capital. The problem from Trump Media is its main product, Truth Social. It is shrinking. Mm-hmm. Monthly active users in iOS and Android, they plunged in February to 494,000 people. That's down 51% year over year, according to SimilarWeb. By comparison, X has 75 million monthly active users in the U.S. Even Threads has more than 10 times as many users as Truth Social, according to SimilarWeb. You know what would be amazing? All of these Democrats that went on there just to watch the train wreck, if they actually pulled their Truth Social accounts, that number would plummet again. And this is true. A quote, 2024 is the make or break year for this company. This is from Kennedy. Went on to say, for TMTG, the thing that matters now is getting in front of the cash cannon. That is the 2024 presidential election. And the company does have one notable advantage. Trump-backed super PACs have raised millions. Where do you think they'll spend their digital ad buckets?
Yeah, we'll see. For sure. That seems like it should be illegal, right?
Well, the other thing, and you asked this, was it Katie that you had asked to on X when they were talking about like this plunge? Can he short the stock?
And Stephanie Ruhle.
Thank you. He can't short the stock for, well, hopefully that you shouldn't be able to short the stock anyway. I know that's a thing that people do, but 6 months. He's going to wait 6 months unless he gets a waiver, even to cash out any of his shares. Mm-hmm. So everything that's happening right now, from what I understand, this company's not going to go public if it has plummeted in value. And that's what's happening right now, it looks like, with the stock. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, it went public. But
oh, thank you.
Yeah. But it's going to, if once they're allowed to short sell it.
Yes.
6 months. It'll go even further.
Yep, 6 months.
It'll go even further. All right, next up from Josh Dazzi at the Washington Post. In the years after Donald Trump lost the presidency to Joe Biden, Trump sent so many emails and text messages asking for money that Republican consultants warned his mailing lists could become useless. The former president's friends told him that they were being asked for too much too often, and Trump himself ordered aides at one point to slow the solicitations. Some of his fans, pockets emptied, mailed handwritten letters apologizing for not being able to give more.
Good Lord.
Now, as Trump and Biden prepare for a rematch, Trump's vaunted small dollar fundraising operation sucks. It's not bringing in as much money as it once did. In 2020, Trump and his fundraising committees raised a record $626.6 million from small donors, 35% more than Biden took in from small donors in 2020. But last year, Trump raised just $51 million from small donors.
Whoa.
That's way down from the $119 million he registered in 2019 and only 18% more than Biden's total. His small dollar haul, which includes donations of $200 or less, was not nearly enough to offset Biden's lead among major donors. The RNC also raised much less money from small donors in 2023 than it did in 2019, contributing to budget problems for the party. Officials at the National Republican Senatorial Committee, that's the NRSC, they were shocked by the low returns on their investment in strategy ahead of the last midterm elections. Really? You guys were shocked?
Yeah, right. I know.
More than 24 people across the Trump campaign, Republican fundraising committees, and private firms spoke to the Post for this story. And many spoke on the condition of anonymity, of course. They said, quote, "The biggest problem in GOP fundraising is that we don't treat donors well." That's what John Hall, a Republican small donor fundraiser who runs the digital firm Apex Strategy, said. Quote, "Sending 8 emails and texts a day that promise an artificial match, threaten to take away your GOP membership, or call you a traitor if you don't donate, doesn't build long-term relationships with donors." Really? That's not working out for you?
Yeah, you're a douche if you don't donate. Well, yeah. It doesn't feel very good.
You're a traitor. But, you know, yeah, wow. Small dollar fundraising firms have warned some GOP clients to lower their expectations. When former Vice President Pence launched his presidential campaign, officials at Targeted Victory, a small dollar digital firm, warned him that, quote, returns were way down because of oversaturation. That's according to Mark Short, his former chief of staff. Pence's campaign struggled to raise small dollar donations, and he dropped out long before voting began. Democratic House and Senate candidates running for election in 2022 raised significantly more that year from small dollar donors than Republicans did, $279 million to $212 million in total. The Republican National Committee also struggled in small dollar fundraising campaigns for candidates other than Trump. They often flopped. One such message, a sweepstakes to meet Pence, raised less than $500.
Oh my God.
According to people familiar with the 2022
sweepstakes. You think his wife would have even chipped in for more than $500?
Yeah, I think I could get a higher bid at like a auction for a date at Punxsutawney.
You know? Oh, 100%. Someone listening would pay way more than $500 to have a date with you, Allison.
I'm just saying. And also, you know what? My podcast network didn't lose $58 million in 2023.
No, it did not.
Trump has made changes to his small dollar strategy as his rematch with Biden draws near. Susie Wiles, his de facto chief of staff, is now responsible for his small dollar fundraising. She's also a witness against him in the documents case. Kobe, the architect of his 2020 strategy, is no longer involved. Wiles tested various strategies, including fewer emails, toggling the number of pitches based on the week, and trying various vendors, according to people familiar with her methods. Maybe if you changed your fucked up fascist platform.
Maybe.
No, I think just fewer emails will do the trick. That's the key. Maybe on off weeks when it's cloudy, maybe we send more email. That should do it. Now, Trump cut ties with one of the major vendors less than a year ago. And Wiles has polled various Trump advisors about how to raise money from small donors. At times, she described the process to others as frustrating, but she has expressed confidence in recent weeks that the situation is improving. Small dollar donors stopped giving to RNC as much. It brought in $35 million in small dollar donations last year, down from $94 million. That's a third almost in 2019.
Thank you so much, AG. This is from Heather Hollingsworth at the Associated Press. An office manager at a weekly newspaper in Kansas is the latest employee to sue over a police raid last year that sparked a firestorm. Sherry Bentz alleges in a suit filed Friday in federal court that she was unlawfully detained and interrogated and had her cell phone seized. Two other employees, reporter Phyllis Zorn and former reporter Deb Groover, they sued previously over the August 11th raid of the Marion County Records newsroom. Police also searched the home of publisher Eric Meyer that day, seizing equipment and personal cell phones. Then Marion Police Chief Gideon Cody is among the defendants in the suit. He said he was investigating whether the newspaper committed identity theft or other crimes in assessing a local restaurant owner's state driving record. Okay. Cody later resigned following the release of body camera video of the raid showing an officer searching the desk of a reporter investigating the chief's past. Now, Cody did not immediately respond to text from the Associated Press seeking for comment. The raid put Marion, a town of about 1,900 residents, about 150 miles southwest of Kansas City, at the center of a national debate over press freedom. Legal experts said it likely violated state or federal law. Well, Meyer's 98-year-old mother, who lived with him, died the day after the raid, and he attributes her death to stress caused by it. Benz alleges in the suit that she was prepared to run the payroll when Cody and other officers entered the building with a search warrant that unconstitutionally targeted the Record and its staff over their news gathering. That's what they're saying. In the months leading up to the raid, the paper had been trying to find out more about why Cody left the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. It meant a big pay cut. The Kansas City police paid him nearly $116,000 a year, while the Marion job paid $60,000 a year. The suit said Benz was shocked, asking, "Here? What kind of search warrant?" The suit described the raid as unprecedented and retaliatory. At one point, she explained to Cody that she was the office manager and not directly involved in reporting. Quote, "Honestly," she said in response to one question, "I have no idea because what they do, I have no idea." The suit also said the paper had drawn the ire of the town's then mayor, who's another defendant in the case. Quote, "Benz was caught in the crossfire of this retaliation and was harmed by it." This is what the suit said, noting she reduced her workload because of, quote, "the significant emotional toll of the raid." So this raid that they did is having ramifications that are just butterfly affecting. So I think there's going to be more that comes out of this story for sure.
Yeah. And I hope that there's a criminal investigation going on into this.
Absolutely.
Federal and local. But thank you for that update. I mean, we've been following this Marion raid for a while now. And I was wondering what was up with it. And this story popped up in my feed today. So thank you for that update. All right, everybody, we'll be back with a feature story about the Havana Syndrome from The Insider, followed by the good news. Stay with us.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's AG. Before my Helix mattress, I was on a seemingly endless search for good sleep. The first night on my Helix mattress, I knew I'd found the one. Just the right balance of softness and support, leading to mornings where I'm truly rested. Helix didn't just improve my nights, it made my days better too. Just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life, and you'll get 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Helix Sleep's array of 20 unique mattresses caters to all sleep styles and preferences, featuring the Lux series for unparalleled comfort and the new Helix Elite collection for those seeking the latest in sleep technology. Whether you need a mattress for big and tall sleepers or a cozy option for your kids, Helix has you covered. Helix even has mattresses with cooling technology, so you'll be comfortable in every season. Take the 2-minute sleep quiz, effortlessly find your mattress, and then it'll be direct delivered to your door for free. Helix is committed to your satisfaction too, offering a 100-night in-home trial and warranties lasting up to 15 years, ensuring your investment is protected. Everyone in the world knows now I sleep on my side and I like a medium firm bed. So when I took the Helix sleep quiz, I was matched with the Helix Midnight. It's the best mattress I've ever slept on, hands down, head and shoulders. I would never go back to my old mattress. Helix's dedication to quality and innovation has not gone unnoticed. It was named the number one overall mattress in 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine, highlighting its status as a leader in the sleep industry. I love my Helix sleep mattress and you will too. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This story is not getting near the coverage it deserves, so I wanted to feature it here on The Beans. It's from Roman Dobrokhotov, Christo Grosev, and Michael Weiss at The Insider. It says, a year-long investigation by The Insider, in collaboration with 60 Minutes and Der Spiegel, has uncovered evidence suggesting that unexplained anomalous health incidents known as Havana Syndrome may have their origin in the use of directed energy weapons wielded by members of the Russian GRU Unit 29155. Members of the Kremlin's infamous military intelligence sabotage squad have been placed at the scene of suspected attacks on overseas U.S. government personnel and their family members, leading victims to question what Washington knows about the origins of Havana Syndrome and what an appropriate Western response might entail. It goes on to say, he was tall, certainly taller than Joy's neighbors and the Georgians she'd come to know in 8 months of living in Dagomi, an upscale residential community in Tbilisi. He was young and thin and blonde and well-dressed, as if headed to the theater or perhaps a wedding. Minutes earlier, on October 7, 2021, Joy, an American nurse and the wife of a U.S. embassy official, had been taking her laundry out of the dryer when she was completely consumed by an acute ringing sound that reminded her of what someone in the movies experiences after a bomb has gone off. Quote, it just pierced my ears, came in my left side, felt like it came through the window into my left ear, she remembers. I immediately felt fullness in my head and just a piercing headache. She ran out of the laundry room on the second floor of her house and into the bathroom adjoining the master bedroom, and then she vomited. Joy and her husband, Hunter, a Justice Department attaché in the U.S. Embassy in Tbilisi, had only arrived in Georgia in February of 2020, in the midst of the COVID-19 lockdown. Despite the all-consuming noise in her head, Joy called Hunter. Both their names, by the way, have been changed for this article to protect their identities. As the spouse of a U.S. official serving abroad, she's undergone overseas survival training and remembered that if something didn't feel right, the first thing you do is get off the X. That means leave the location. Joy checked the house's security camera at the front door to see if anyone was outside and saw a black Mercedes crossover parked just beyond the gate of her property, directly opposite her laundry room. Joy went outside, and that's when she saw this tall, thin man. She raised her phone to photograph him. Quote, it was like he locked eyes with me. He knew what I was doing. Then he got into the Mercedes and drove off. Joy took a picture of the car and its license plate as it pulled away. She says she didn't see the man again until 3 years later, when she was shown a photograph of Albert Averyanov, a Russian operative attached to Unit 29155, a notorious assassination and sabotage squad of the GRU, that's Moscow's military intelligence service. Albert is not an ordinary Russian spy. Aged only 23 when this encounter took place, he was the son of the founding commander of Unit 29155, General Andrei Averyanov, who was 56, and now the powerful deputy director of the GRU. He's tasked with running the Kremlin's foreign policy in Africa. To the public, he was a fresh graduate of the Moscow State University, where he had earned a master's in management of migration processes, a topic in which his father took a keen interest. Even within the nepotistic GRU, Albert's trajectory was unusually steep. A young cadet who was being groomed for a bright career in espionage. In 2019, only 20 years old, he'd even interned in Geneva with the Residentura of Unit 29155, disguising his visit to the international Swiss capital as legions of other Russian intelligence officers have, as an English language learning trip. Such was Andrei's desire to see his son follow in his footsteps that the GRU had to ignore its own rules of recruitment, which mandate officers blend in with their surroundings. As a 6'2" young blonde, Albert was conspicuous in any crowd, let alone a tiny suburb of Tbilisi. When Joy saw Albert's face 3 years later, she had a visceral reaction. Quote, I can absolutely say that this looks like the man I saw in the street. A years-long investigation by The Insider, as I said, in collaboration with 60 Minutes and Der Spiegel, has uncovered evidence suggesting that unexplained anonymous health incidents, also known as Havana Syndrome, may have their origin in the use of directed energy weapons wielded by members of Unit 29155. Among this investigation's core findings is the fact that senior members of the unit received awards and political promotions for work related to the development of non-lethal acoustic weapons, a term used in Russian military scientific literature to describe both sound and radio frequency-based directed energy devices, as both would result in acoustic artifacts in the victim's brain. These and other operatives attached to Unit 29155, traveling undercover, have been geolocated to places around the world just before or after the time of reported anomalous health incidents, or AHIs. That's anomalous health incident. That's the government's, how they refer to Havana syndrome, AHI. Furthermore, Joy is not the only victim to identify a known member of the Russian Black Ops squad lurking around her home. The first sighting may have happened exactly 7 years earlier. Contrary to the information that has been made public about Havana syndrome, that it began in the eponymous Cuban capital in 2016, there were likely attacks 2 years earlier in Frankfurt, Germany, when a U.S. government employee stationed at the consulate there was knocked unconscious by something akin to a strong energy beam. The victim was later diagnosed with a TBI, traumatic brain injury, and was also able to identify a Geneva-based Unit 29155 operative. The incident occurred within months of Russia's 2014 invasion of Ukraine, in which a stealthy, nearly bloodless seizure of the Crimean Peninsula in February and March gave way to a roiling 8-year-long dirty war in the eastern industrial heartland of Donbas, that's close to Ukraine's border with Russia. Now, the insider 60 Minutes and Der Spiegel, they have uncovered documentary evidence that Unit 29155 has been experimenting with exactly the kind of weaponized technology experts suggest is plausible as a cause for the mysterious medical condition that has to date affected over 100 far-flung U.S. spies and diplomats, as well as several Canadian officials. Many are seasoned subject matter specialists on Russia, fluent in the language. Others have expertise in different fields, such as Middle East or Latin America, but were assigned after the takeover of Crimea to sensitive U.S. government roles aimed at countermanding Russian aggression and intelligence operations across Europe and North America. Unit 29155, moreover, is infamous with the U.S. intelligence community. Quote, their scope is global for conducting lethal operations and acts of sabotage. That's a former high-ranking CIA officer with subject matter expertise talking to the insider. Quote, their mission is to find, fix, and finish, all in support of Vladimir Putin's imperial dreams, unquote. Havana syndrome, itself long thought to be the accrued biological effect caused by a different kind of unique weapon, encompasses a variation of symptoms, including chronic headaches, vertigo, tinnitus, insomnia, nausea, lasting psychophysiological impairment, and in some cases, blindness or hearing loss. Many victims have said they were fine 1 minute, then stricken with an intense pain or pressure in their skull, and then usually localized on one side of the head, as if they were caught in a beam of concentrated energy. A good number have been diagnosed with mild traumatic brain injuries. Others have suffered such severe long-term cognitive and vestibular after effects that they can no longer function on a day-to-day basis and have been medically retired from government service. Now, Joy, talked about at the top, suffers from headaches every day and has for the past 3 years. She has also undergone 2 surgeries for the appearance of holes in the bony walls that encase her inner ears. She will need a 3rd surgery to address the rapid deterioration of her temporal bone, a condition she says her neurosurgeon is unable to explain. There's a reason why the Havana Act only came into force in 2021. For the past 8 years, Havana syndrome has been the subject of intense controversy. Sociologists have suggested it is little more than a mass psychogenic illness or perhaps an outbreak of mass hysteria. Such arguments have been undercut by multiple medical studies, including one conducted by an expert panel convened by the U.S. intelligence community. The final assessment of that investigation found that AHIs had, quote, a unique combination of core characteristics that cannot be explained by known environmental or medical conditions and could be due to external stimuli. Nonetheless, in March 2023, the ODNI, Office of the Director of National Intelligence, issued a redacted report stating that it was very unlikely that AHIs caused or were caused by a foreign adversary. This assessment has sent shockwaves among the hundreds of former and current intelligence officers and their family members who believe they have suffered significant and often irreversible health consequences at the hands of an enemy force. As a result, many of these victims feel betrayed by their government for neglecting to identify the culprit for their predicament. The Insider and its investigative partners have uncovered new evidence in the form of intercepted Russian intelligence documents, travel logs, and call metadata, along with eyewitness testimony, the totality of which challenges the assessment made by the ODNI. Adam, a pseudonym adopted by Patient Zero, the first CIA officer to be stricken with Havana syndrome in Cuba, told the Insider, quote, what this long-term investigation has shown is that either the intelligence community is incapable of carrying out its most basic function, or it has worked to cover up the facts and gaslight injured employees and the public. Now, Greg Edgreen, a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army, set up the working group investigating Havana syndrome for the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, from 2020 to 2023. The role gave him access to classified intelligence compiled not just by the Pentagon, but by other agencies within the U.S. intelligence community. In response to the investigation, Ed Green told 60 Minutes, quote, "If I'm wrong about Russia being behind anomalous health incidents, I will come on your show and I will eat my tie." The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence is currently investigating how U.S. spy agencies reached their nothing to see here assessment in March of 2023. Given the DIA Working Group's contribution to the ODNI report, which acknowledges varying levels of confidence reached by different agencies, Ed Green's unambiguous attribution of culpability to Moscow should raise eyebrows in the U.S. intelligence community and in Congress. Another organization said to be skeptical that a foreign adversary is not behind Havana Syndrome is the National Security Agency, which deals in signals intelligence or intercepted communications. Of all the cases examined by The Insider, 60 Minutes, and Der Spiegel, the most well-documented involve U.S. intelligence and diplomatic personnel with subject matter expertise in Russia or operational experience in countries like Georgia and Ukraine, two post-Soviet states that have undergone pro-Western, quote, color revolutions in the past two decades. Some of these personnel are still active and declined to speak for this article. Putin himself has not shied away from laying blame for these pro-democratic protest movements at the doorstep of Langley or Foggy Bottom or both. As recently as his February 9th interview with former Fox News anchor Tucker Carlson, Putin peddled the conspiracy theory that Euromaidan was not the work of discontented Ukrainians at all. Quote, "The CIA completed its job in implementing the coup d'etat." That's what he said to Carlson. Now, Putin would have every interest, in other words, in neutralizing scores of U.S. intelligence officers he deemed responsible for his loss of the former satellites or constituent pieces of the former Soviet empire. Ukraine is the linchpin nation in Putin's grand design to reestablish the Soviet Union. As President Biden phrased it on February 24, 2022, the date of Russia's full-scale invasion. Greg Edgreen, the former DIA investigator of Havana Syndrome, told 60 Minutes that his working group poured through, quote, "a large body of data ranging from signals intelligence, human intelligence, open source reporting, anything regarding the internet, travel records, financial records, you name it, and we kept on seeing a number of data points. This was happening to our top 5%, 10% performing officers across the Defense Intelligence Agency. Consistently, there was a Russia nexus. There was some angle where they had worked against Russia, focused on Russia, and done extremely well. A consensus has formed among the growing community of AHI sufferers that the U.S. government, and the CIA in particular, is hiding the full extent of what it knows about the source of Havana Syndrome. The victims offer two general hypotheses as to why. The first is that releasing a full intelligence report around Russian involvement might be so shocking as to convince the American people and their representatives that Moscow has committed an act of war against the United States, thereby raising thorny questions as to how a nuclear power fond of showing off its hypersonic missiles ought to be made to pay. The second is acknowledging Havana Syndrome is caused by a foreign adversary could put a damper on recruitment to the CIA and the State Department. After all, how many Americans would be willing to serve their country overseas in the full knowledge that their next load of laundry or morning jaunt to the embassy could result in permanent physical and mental ailments? The State Department has walked a knife edge in addressing this contingency. The Insider, 60 Minutes, and Der Spiegel obtained a memo distributed to the employees of the Tbilisi mission in December 29th of 2021, over 2 months after Joy's attack. The memo references a task force responsible for coordinating responses to AHIs and several pages of guidance on how to talk to children about the strange events, offering distinct advice for different age groups. For young kids who, quote, "don't have enough life experience to understand some of the elements involved in a complex, difficult topic like AHI, the memo advises parents to catch their biases and limit the amount of information the children can access. Quote, "don't say things like the Russians are trying to hurt or intimidate us," or "if you hear a loud noise, you're probably going to feel dizzy and sick, so make sure you get off the X," etc. The implication here is that not only are AHIs real, but U.S. diplomats are all too aware of how they happen and who's behind them. Yeah, for that memo to go out and say, "don't say things like it was the Russians," or "you might feel dizzy," I mean, that acknowledges the whole thing exists right there, and it's probably the Russians. Still, It remains unclear why it took American officials so long to acknowledge the problem and why they still show no sign of having a plan to solve it. Quote, I have spent more than a decade fighting for U.S. government employees and their families, sometimes small children and even pets, who've been victimized by AHIs overseas and domestically. That's what attorney Mark Zayed said. Quote, it has been so distressing to see how much effort our government has undertaken to cover up the true details of these attacks, no doubt perpetrated by a foreign adversary. Now, unlike Gulf War syndrome, which resulted from a confluence of environmental factors rather than from the deliberate actions of a state actor, Havana syndrome shows all the markings of a Russian hybrid warfare operation. If it is established that the Kremlin really is behind the attacks, then the provision of health care and monetary compensation for the victims will not be enough to solve the problem. Removing this many capable American spies and diplomats from active service without killing them and without your main adversary even admitting they've done so, such a sustained decade-long campaign would easily count as one of Vladimir Putin's greatest strategic victories against the United States. Now, there is a lot more to this story and from these incredible reporters. I only went through about half of it. And we're going to have a link to the insider story in the show notes for you. Seriously, click on it. Go read this story. Grab yourself a cup of tea. Make sure there's no polonium in it. And read this story. It's extremely important, especially in light of the ODNI's assessment that it's very unlikely that it came from an adversary. This is huge. And I thank Der Spiegel and the Insider in 60 Minutes for doing this investigation for our government workers. All right, everybody, stick around. We will be right back with the good news. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Good news, good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, any new idioms you want to share with us, if you want to take a guess at who the dumbest Republican in Congress is, you can send that to us. Misheard song lyrics, Whoopi stories, Blanky stories, stuffed animal stories, what the fark is in your arc, shit kids say, shit you say. I love those. Self shout outs to a loved one, shout out to a small business in your area. If you don't have pod pet tax to pay, you can send us an adoptable pet near you. We can see if we can find a forever home for that pet. And you can just draw us a picture of an animal and send it in and make us guess at what it is if you want. We thank you all for the good news. Baby pictures, frog orgies, whatever it is, send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. All right. First up, from Victoria H, pronouns she and her. Hi, I'm sending this wish to my husband and patron of the Daily Beans, Tom H. A happy 25th anniversary. Surprise, Tom. We got married in Maui after I won a free trip to Hawaii from a radio show. Awesome. Our wedding was aired live on the radio and streamed on the internet way back when. Lots of buffering. I knew he was the one on our first date, and I was right. He's a good man, and together we've gotten three kids to adulthood, made it through one cancer battle, mine. And there have been a lot of adventures along the way. This year, I wrote my first book, a romance called No Gouda Without You, and Tom is my new hype man. He tells everyone about my book and how amazed he is that I wrote it. I don't know where I'd be without Tom, and I'm looking forward to many, many more anniversaries and the second Biden-Harris administration.
Yes.
Pet tax is our dog, Bowie, and then look at this beautiful wedding photo.
Oh, gorgeous.
And Bowie is adorbs. Mm-hmm. And by the way, No Gouda Without You, my best friend of almost 30 years, we always say Gouda instead of good. How you doing? I'm Gouda. We do it. That's just our, well, you know how when you are like friends or siblings or you know somebody long enough, you just have your own language. So I think that's adorable. Thank you for that. And happy anniversary to Victoria and Tom.
Oh, look at this one. This is from Grammy, pronouns she and her. I shared a picture of our granddaughter when she was a newborn in December. Now she's a chunky little bunny, and she's so cute.
Look at all those Easter eggs.
Oh, my God.
Just beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, this is future co-host of Jack and the Beans Talk with Rachel.
pronoun she and her. Maybe not a corgi, but peak cute butt vibes for Dana. Guess my pup, Bumper Patrick.
Wow. Oh my God, look at this dog. What a cool looking dog.
Seriously.
Okay. Shih Tzu and corgi?
But I feel like there's also...
like a bulldog?
A little bit. They've got that little underbite. So I would say a bulldog, but also like a fluffy, like a shepherd, like a German shepherd.
Yeah, maybe. Adorable dog, though. What a cool looking dog.
Oh my God. Stop it with this. No breeds, we win.
Oh, all right. No breed given. We win.
I feel like the producer does that to us now. Can I, if that's you, just like, well, they're going to follow the dot, dot, dot. I'm going to listen to them argue about this for 5 minutes. And then I'm going to be like, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I think it is on purpose, too.
I love it.
All right. Next up from Patricia, pronouns she and her. Hi, AG and DG. Allison, you asked us to send baby pictures of ourselves. I decided to go for a studio shot of me at 6 months old and a very current pic at age 70. I'm sad that my wife, Katie, and I will not be able to come to your show in Portland in June. We listen to your show every morning and we're proud to be patrons. I sent you a message last summer giving a shout out to our local business, a great vegan Mexican restaurant called Miss Tacones. Yes. I just wanted to tell you that the venue for your show this June is so close to that restaurant. We can't swing seeing your show live, but would love to take you and Dana to Miss Tacones if you would be available. Just a thought.
Oh,
Miss Tacones is the place where trans people of color always eat for free.
Oh, that's right.
I'm including a picture of the owners of Miss Tacones. Keep doing what you girls do best. Thank you. Oh, look at the baby photo. And then look at this photo. You look, you're not 70. There's no way she's 70. I'm sorry. I disagree.
Yeah, no way. Look how cute that baby is, though.
Portland is in July. But yes, I'm so sorry. But yeah, we'll see if we can make it. And then look.
The owners, they're adorbs.
Totes adorbs.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. This one's from anonymous, pronoun she and her. Dearest Beans, you are queens and an inspiration. I'm an OG listener since the kitchen table days. Your sweary hope and the good news get me up each day. I love how you raise us all up in this community. I want to shout out my amazing friend, Brooke Champagne, who has her first book, Nola Face, A Latina's Life in the Big Easy. It was published by the University of Georgia Press, out today.
Ooh.
Brooke is one of three women I met randomly through an online call for a writer's group. We are scattered across the country in very different lives. We meet once a week to celebrate each other and discuss our writing. In between, we text encouragement and love for all the shit people go through. Brooke is a badass who runs half marathons, teaches in the MFA program at Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Dances Zumba and fights the feminist fight, all while maintaining a family. She's just come back from Cuba, where she started a student writing collective. Okay. This person's a badass. In her memoir and essays, Brooke jumps from her Guatemalan grandmother's beautiful legs to some of her own worst moments, written in multiple literary forms that make you laugh, cringe, and gasp at her level of perception and craft. What a great review. She wonders what it means to feel like enough to claim an intersectional, what is enough to claim an intersectional identity. There is even a narrative that twines giving birth and Amy Mann's one, in a way that makes perfect sense. It's a stunning read. This is a fantastic review of your friend's book, by the way.
She's another great writer, and I love Amy Mann.
Yeah, we're going to have a link to the book in the show notes. And for pet tax, here are Rue and Monkey not so subtly requesting their bowls be filled.
Yeah, look at that stare down. Jeez.
Seriously. Goodness.
Damn, stink eye. Well, thank you for that. That's amazing. Congratulations on the book. Next up, Nikki, pronouns she and her. Hello, awesome ladies of the Lagoon. Please give a level 10 birthday shout out to my son. He just hit double digits. He has a tendency to chime in with your opening theme song, but instead of saying Daily Beans, he will say collard greens. We're not sure why he does, but it makes us laugh every time. We listen to all the pods and love the information and stories that may have been missed or ignored in mainstream media. Please keep up the good work. You are keeping the flames on the sides of my face down to a minimum. Great quote from the movie Clue. Here are some pictures of the birthday boy, past and present. Look at this bean.
Oh, goodness. It's a perfect little newborn bean. And then look what this beautiful bean grew up to.
Amazing.
That bean is now a queen.
That perfect smile.
Ugh, I love it. And by the way, it says queen on the shirt.
Yes.
But there is a small chance. I'm just saying this
lovely. Well, look at that background.
Mm-hmm.
That's very festive.
It is.
And shimmery and glittery.
I love it. And if this lovely human ends up being part of the LGBTQ community, we will welcome them with open arms. And if they do not, we will welcome them either way.
Either way, either way. And either way, that smile outshines anything in the picture.
Oh, I mean, so cute.
This kid, I guarantee, lights up a room whenever they walk into it. Thank you.
Goodness.
So much for all of your incredible good news. We appreciate you. If you have anything to send us anything at all, especially those student debt relief stories. I know there's going to be a couple few hundred thousand people getting more student debt relief, despite Republicans trying to sue to stop it because they're dickheads. But send those stories in to us. We'd love to hear about it or any Democratic program that has helped you or your family or a loved one. Again, I send those to the White House and they love them. So send them in to us, dailybeanspod.com. Click on contact. Do you have any final thoughts today, my friend?
I don't. I have nothing important to end this podcast with that is better than things we've already said.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dana. It was great to see you today. Everybody, we'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your mental health. Take care of your family. Vote blue over Q.
And please take all of your family with you.
Fuck yeah, Florida. Here we come. I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch." you will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.